This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost. It is a great company for your website or blog and very affordable, just $6.95 per month. I love it. I use it myself for my personal blog, fatherroderick.com. Check it out at sqpn.com/Bluehost. And by my new book, Geek Priest, Confessions of a New Media Pioneer. You can order it at the Amazon store. There is some Once Upon a Time in there as well. Click on the link on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com, before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
Hello, Regina. You. You're real? Next time you claim to be me, you'll find out just how real I am. Don't ever do that again.
Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and we're definitely real here. We're going to talk about the episode number 6 of this third season called Ariel, and joining me today, Shelley, David, and Inge. And David just literally ran in for this show. How are you, David?
Doing good, Father.
Glad you could join us. Joining us also, Shelley, how are you? So sorry you couldn't make it last week, but we're glad to have you on the show.
I know, I'm sorry, I had to work, but I'm very happy to be here today.
And also joining us today, our producer, Inge, who has prepared a number of sound clips for this episode as well, which always come in handy to bring back this episode in our mind. Because for some of us, it's just, I don't know, a day ago that they watched the episode, but some of you might be listening to this years later because they've just discovered the show on DVD or on Netflix or wherever the show in the end will end up. And then they go back in the archives and under a thick layer of dust, they find this podcast and listen to it years, and we're already old and gray and still glad you could join us in the year 2050. So before we begin, a general poll here about your overall rating of the episode. Let me start again with David. How would you rate this show, this episode?
Oh, I'd go with I'd probably go. I'm still hovering between a 7 and an 8. I liked it. It did a lot of things that I did not expect.
Very good. 7 out of 8. Inge, what about you?
I found it a little bit meh because the story didn't move forward. So I would give it a 5.5 out of 10.
Ooh, that's a very low grade. What about you, Shelley?
Oh, I liked it. I gave it an 8, and I don't mean to always disagree with Inge, but I thought it did move the story forward because of the Neil, that they reunited with Neil all in one episode. We didn't have to wait forever for it, and they dropped more hints about Rumpel and Pan.
Mm-hmm. I will give this episode another high rating, just like last week's episode. I'm going to go for it with an 8.5 out of 10. I thought this was a great show, brought back a lot of the elements that I loved in the first season of Once Upon a Time, and especially Regina. She gets a 9.5 out of 10 for this episode
because
of
her as well.
These amazing one-liners about dirty, nasty munchkins and the catch of the day. And I thought it was brilliant writing and fantastic acting. And her performance, oh, well, we'll talk about that later. It was awesome. So let's start at the beginning. We go back in time and back to the days that Snow White was still running from Regina, and we see that she's pursued by two soldiers. I guess the budget didn't allow for more extras, and she jumps off a cliff into some water, and for some strange reason, that knocks her unconscious. I don't know why. Normally, when people jump in the water, they swim, but, not Snow. Perhaps she was melting. I don't know. And then she's saved by Ariel. And this is the first. I was expecting a bit of a reveal that over we would see Ariel after 10 minutes, you know, and you first get some hints. But no, it's like boom. I'm Ariel. How are you? And I'm a mermaid. Well, again, what did you think of Ariel and the way she was depicted here? I assume we've all seen the Disney the animated version of Ariel. What about this real life Ariel?
I was so glad. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Inga. Go ahead.
I was so glad they didn't twist her into something evil like they did with Pan. Because I think there would be a massive uproar if Ariel would be dark.
Yes.
So I really liked her cheerful, and her hair wasn't as red as I thought it would be, but it was kind. Yeah, I liked how she was portrayed, just like I wanted her to be.
I thought that the writers have always given us hints that Ariel was one of their favorites, and they've been trying since season one to figure out a way to write her in. I thought they did a really good job. You can tell they paid a lot of attention to how to make her story fit in with what's going on here without jumping all the way to the end. I thought the way that they tied it in with the current story worked beautifully. And I thought it was sweet. I liked all the elements. I thought they put it in very nicely.
Yeah.
David, I guess go.
No, I would agree. It was a little odd where, oh, hey, I'm Ariel, but it actually fit, and they didn't do something, put some horrendously weird twist or anything like that, but it at least not for Ariel's character. They made her, I mean, she's probably a little older than, probably a few years older than the one in the film. Back, you know, seems like a long time ago, but the original Ariel. But still, she was pretty much she was kind of I think she was a little mermaid that everyone was hoping for. And then, you know, when push comes to shove, she definitely makes the right decision.
Right.
I like that part. There wasn't that she didn't when things were tough, she didn't cave and take the easy way out.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you can hear, David went the extra mile for this particular episode of the podcast because of the theme of Ariel. He actually is recording this or Skyping in a submarine under the sea. It's really amazing, David. We appreciate it so much.
More or less, it's raining like crazy here, and I could not get back to dry land, as it were.
Hey, I've got this bracelet. Perhaps you can try it on. It might help you.
I think we know how that goes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Father.
No, go ahead.
I thought the actress did a really beautiful job with the role. I know my daughters all thought it was Amy Adams when the actress first came on screen.
Oh, okay.
Amy Adams has been in Night at the Museum, Smithsonian, Julia and Julia. She's probably best known for the movie Enchanted.
Yes.
Where she plays the princess, or the similar character.
Now that you mention it, she does resemble her a bit.
But it's not her. It's the actress who was on the Reba show for so many years, playing the older daughter Cheyenne. And I had to look twice to remember that's Joanna Swisher.
Okay.
Or Joanna Garcia. I think I can't remember her last name now, but... But I thought she did a really sweet job.
Yeah, what I liked is that she definitely brings across this naivete of Ariel, like a teenager. So like, just believes everything. Is super naive. Still has to learn a lot of things, and that's kind of what is part of the original Disney version as well. The actress is a little bit too old for that behavior. That's kind of what was. It was a bit jarring to see, like almost childish behavior in the beginning, at least from an older actress. But the same is true for Snow White. I thought that conversation was more of a high school type of conversation there. Like, oh, you're a mermaid. Oh, you're Snow White. Oh, well, what can we? I don't know. It was a little bit too over the top cheerful for me.
I bought it from her because she was a mermaid. So what does she know about humans? So.
Well, that's true. That's true.
And they made that reference, you know, you don't know anything about mermaid mythology. Well, probably about as much as you know about human mythology.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Had some good opportunities for some really good lines in there.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there were so many great one-liners in this episode. I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, we get all these great quotes.
For some reason, the phrase salad trident, I just started cracking up.
Yes, salad trident. We'll get to that when we go to the under the sea ball. But first, we witness a bit of training. Regina training Emma, and it so reminded me of Luke Skywalker's Jedi training. Let's get that out of the way. It's like, focus, concentrate. I could almost hear Yoda say it. And then, of course, the dark side, use your anger, and Emma reacting by, well, there's got to be a way to do this without going dark. So
then they verbally spar with each other, and then Regina will look on her face. You smell that? Smoke.
And then we
there's poor mom and dad sitting there going, I really don't like this. Well, I know, but I don't think we have any choice.
Right. It's still so strange to see people of the same age or possibly even younger talk about Emma as being their kid. It's really only in Once Upon a Time.
It really felt like Snow and Charming were sitting on the peanut row, like observing and making offhand comments. And kept, it was very amusing, that part.
However, they do get to know that Neil is alive. And the big problem is, of course, they don't want to tell Emma because, at least Charming is afraid that if it's just part of Pan's games and it might not be true, or she might lose Neil again, then that it would be too much. And this introduces us to the overarching theme of this episode, and that is it good to keep a secret, or is it better to tell the truth? And there is something to say for both choices. Keeping a secret sometimes, as Hook says, is good to protect someone you love, but Snow is convinced that keeping a secret is almost the same as telling a lie and not telling the truth, and she has apparently some negative experiences with that, which of course is revealed soon after in the whole story arc of Ariel and Snow. So, what could be Pan's plan? Yeah, go ahead, Shelley.
I was going to say, I think you have an audio clip of my favorite moment in the whole episode.
That is when Snow... Wait, I think that's coming up later.
Okay.
Now, let me see. It's the Snow can't keep the secret. Yeah, I'll play that in a second. We're almost there. But before we can play that clip, we first are brought back to Ariel again and the conversation she has with Snow. And she confesses to Snow that she's on the run to Eric. And then there's a great line and, of course, a great reference to the Disney version of Little Mermaid. I collect things and out of the bag come all sorts of things. And let's see, she talks about she has this little leaflet, the piece of paper, which is in the announcement of the ball in honor of the sea goddess Ursula. So apparently her bag is waterproof. Otherwise, it's probably not the best place to keep a piece of paper in. But and she, of course, wants to go. We quickly learn that she has saved Eric from drowning, and she wants to be with him again. And then puts her fins on dry ground, and poof, they suddenly transform into two legs, which was very... At first, I was like, oh, no, they're going to take out the best part of the fairy tale, the original fairy tale by Hans Christian Andersen, and that is that she has to trade in something to get her legs. And I was like, I hope they're not going to do that and just come up with... I thought that the explanation was a bit lame, you know? Oh, well, there's this Ursula, and it's just... when there's a high tide, we get legs, and then 12 hours later, they disappear again. And it's like, come on!
That's only once a year, right?
Yeah, but I was like, I hope this is not a cop out to because they didn't have the budget to do Ursula. I was fearing the worst, but fortunately, that concern was not necessary. And then, of course, we see the reflection of the previous scene. where they are debating whether to tell Emma about Neil's existence or Neil being alive, and that is now Snow has to keep a secret, and the secret being that Ariel is in fact a mermaid. And Ariel asks Snow to keep it under the sea. And then we get to Snow. And the question, of course, is, can Snow keep the secret that Neil is alive?
Done. It's not a problem.
Where are you guys going?
Get water.
Guys, what's going on? Neil's alive. Neil is... Maybe. Sorry, she deserved to know.
So was this your favorite quote?
Yes, that was my favorite moment in the whole show. Because that's the one that I kept replaying over and over. I mean, I love the Echo Cave, and we'll talk about that. But the way that she's like, I've never lied to her. You don't understand. I can't lie. Oh, no, it's not a lie. But I've never lied to her before. Where are you going? Everybody's like, oh, you know, he's alive. Oh, okay, well, there went my daughters. Were like, do you think that Pan will, Hook will tell them? Do you think, they'll tell Emma? And like, boom, there it is on the table. Let's go. Yep. Move it forward.
And I think it's great because you see the two parents, the father tries to protect his daughter. And then Snow is, you know, I can't lie to my daughter. And probably also she has faith in Emma. She knows that Emma can handle the truth. They don't have to protect her by hiding stuff from her. She's a big girl now. So I think this is very good for the mother-daughter relationship here.
I hope that this would have spun out for a longer time or a bit more action on it. Because the reveal of last week was that Pan appears to Hook and then tell Hook, well, yeah, you're all about opportunist. Mm-hmm. So now what do you do with the information that Neil's alive? And so basically what he does, he walks right up to Charming and tells him. And I was like, oh, that's kind of, I hoped it would be a little bit more drama. But yeah, that's why also I
kind of like it.
I thought it was a little bit meh.
No.
I was pleasantly surprised he just went out and said it, because Prince Charming had just spent the last two or three episodes just hiding something from everyone but Hook, that he'd been poisoned, and then
yeah,
Hook's, and instead of Hook hiding, he was like, Pan just stopped by.
Mm-hmm. So. I thought it was fun that they brought back this quality of Emma that she can sense when someone is hiding something. And so she's like, what's going on, guys?
That's right, her superpower.
Yeah, it's her superpower. So perhaps Snow knows that. You know, there's no point in trying to hide it from her. She'll sense it, and she does. So once that out of the way, we move to Rumpelstiltskin, and it's kind of a scary scene where he's apparently trying to conjure up something, and we don't know exactly what he's doing. I thought he's going to... try to get his shadow back, remember?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
He was in front of that big wall before. But no, this is not about the shadow, according to Peter Pan, who suddenly appears. He's trying to foresee the future, which I didn't even know that Rumpel could do. And then Peter Pan says something which I think is a vital reminder for the whole plot. And when we start speculating about what truly is going on, we have to keep this in mind, and that is, Peter Pan says, there is no point in trying to find out the future because here on this island, time stands still. There is no time, basically. So there's nothing to see.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've talked a lot about Rumpel being a seer and having seen the future and knowing that he had to manipulate all these peoples over all these... you know, two generations worth of people to get reunited with Bay. But even when he was trapped in Storybrooke, he could not see, because even Storybrooke, time stood still.
Mm-hmm.
So here he is back in Neverland. Yeah. He's got his magic back, but he still can't see that future.
Because here too,
and then
time
the next line
still.
When he says, I don't need to see the future, I can make one happen.
Hmm. Yeah, that was interesting too.
What did he mean with that?
Well, I guess, you know, he can just influence what's going on. I don't know, defeat Peter Pan, or I think it's all part of the bigger plan that he might have, and that we don't know for sure yet. But it's getting very complicated right away, because the scene is very strange. Peter Pan has prepared Rumpelstiltskin's favorite breakfast, eggs in a basket. I had to look that up because it's not a breakfast that I'm familiar with here in Europe. And if I'm not familiar with it, then perhaps some of our other listeners might not be as well. It's basically you take a piece of bread, you take out the middle part and you put an egg in it and then fry that. And that's an egg in a basket. And Peter Pan apparently knows that is Rumpelstiltskin's favorite breakfast. Very strange. It seems to indicate, and we've had some hints about this before, that he and Rumpel have lived together for a long time, know each other very, very well. I first thought that it was an homage to some other movie or something. Just eggs in a basket almost sounded like an expression to me, so I googled it, and well, there are a few movies where this particular breakfast is mentioned, but you know, it's Moonstruck with Cher, or V for Vendetta. It's in an episode of Friends. It's in Frasier. It's in the 1941 film Moon Over Miami. I was like, there's no movie there that could explain why this particular breakfast pops up here. And then Peter Pan even adds, I know you like the egg runny, which is such an intimate detail. How could he know?
I have a new theory about that.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I have to apologize first. My notes that I took are grouped by the story, not grouped in chronological order. So if I jump ahead of you, Father, that's why, because I'm looking at the whole story. Okay. So I don't know if this is in the same line, but when he says he's trying to point out that silver lining, Rumpel, you know, you've lost your son. Henry's unattainable to you because, you know, you have to go through me. And we both know you can't.
Mm-hmm.
But they both know he can't. I mean, what's the silver lining by killing you? But the only way for you to kill me is for you to die,
yes,
too. Why are they so inexplicably
mm-hmm.
linked?
Mm-hmm. I have got a theory about that as well.
I was wondering if it's not himself, if it's Rumpel. If Rumpel and Pan are not two halves or some way they're the same. If Rumpel had to, as a child, he had to separate himself, cut off his shadow. Although we just saw him cut off his shadow again.
But no, but I mean,
if he had to separate himself.
Yeah. Hold on. Because we've seen Peter Pan separating himself from his shadow. We've seen Rumpel do that as well. And we wondered at that time, how is it possible that Rumpel can do that too? So the both of them.
Maybe they are brothers.
That's another possibility.
I was wondering if they were brothers because they knew so much about Rumpel's father.
Nope, because he said, have you forgiven your father? He didn't say, have you forgiven our father? If you were talking to your sister, if I'm talking to Lisa, I say dad or our dad. The only time I use your is when I'm differentiating between something. You know, between, like, I say your Brian and my Brian because we're both married to men named Brian. But when he said, have you forgiven your father?
Well,
I was like,
well, wait, no,
why can't he kill Pan?
Hold on, because there might be another solution to this. Haven't you forgiven your father? It could also mean, you can say that when you distance yourself from your own father. Let's say that Peter Pan's and Rumpel's father did something terrible, right? Unforgivable. And Peter Pan is just no longer considering him to be his father. Think of the story of the lost son in the gospel, right? It's not the lost son. How do you call that?
The prodigal son.
When the prodigal son returns, and then the father goes out to the older son, and then he's like, "Oh, your younger brother is back, and please come and feast with us." And then the older brother says, "Your son has returned." It's his brother as well, but he just doesn't want to have anything to do with it anymore. So I'm thinking there's still a possibility that they have the same father, but it still does not explain why, if Rumpel would kill Peter Pan, it would also be his own demise.
Well, I thought about, you know, when a person is traumatized as a child, they split their personality. There's documented cases of schizophrenia or...
That's not schizophrenia.
What is it?
Multiple personality disorders.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. But I wonder if maybe there's some magic involved here that they separated. And somehow Pan, of course, got banished to Neverland. But Rumpel continued on his path.
Is it have we seen Rumpelstiltskin as a kid before?
Nope.
Not yet.
Isn't that episode 8?
I haven't looked ahead, so I don't know.
I haven't looked ahead as well. But I mean, one possible explanation is that Peter Pan is Rumpelstiltskin. That Peter Pan is kind of the younger Rumpelstiltskin stuck there in some parallel universe, and they somehow he split himself up, think Horcruxes in Harry Potter or something like that, and it's just part of himself. I mean, that would explain why if he kills Peter Pan, he would kill himself, because he would kill basically a part of himself. It would also explain why they both have that ability to separate themselves from their shadow, why both of them are evil. Another theory that I had is, but now it gets so complicated and out of whack that I'm not even sure that they could explain this away. But at least it would make sense to say you cannot kill Peter Pan. If you would kill Peter Pan, it would kill you. That could also be the case if Peter Pan was Rumpelstiltskin's father. So if he would kill his father, that somehow, you know, and Peter Pan is his father before. Before Rumpel got killed, so there needs to be some time traveling in here, then, you know, Rumpel would never be born, aka, you know, he would kill himself. But it doesn't make sense. And then there's another theory that I read, is that Peter Pan and Rumpelstiltskin are half-brothers, because, and this is what happens later in this particular conversation, Peter Pan asks Rumpelstiltskin to leave Neverland and to just find himself another family and start again. Could that be a reference to his own father who did that? And that Rumpelstiltskin is perhaps born out of a second relationship of his father with a new mother. Or they could have the same mother and two different fathers. Aha! My brain hurts. Let's first listen to Peter Pan and Rumpel.
You can go. Leave the island.
And abandon my son. And Henry. I don't think so.
Look, even if you did save them, which you won't, what would be the point? They'll never forgive you for all the horrible things you've done.
You don't know that.
Have you forgiven your father? You see my point. Back to that silver lining then. You have a nice girl waiting for you back in Storybrooke. Belle, is it? Stop this foolishness and go back to her. Make a new start. She looks fertile, maybe a new child. You and I both know that's the only future for you.
You and I both know that that is the only future for you. That is so mysterious.
I mean, love the way he toys with him.
Oh my goodness, what's going on? And then...
I think Rumpelstiltskin took lessons from Peter Pan as far as becoming a manipulator.
Uh-huh.
He's good.
Yeah, I mean, they do have similar abilities, which, again, would make it likely that they are somehow related. But how knows...
Because Peter Pan says he's the only one who can get off the island, and then he turns around, and then in this episode, he turns around and says to Rumpel that you can get off the island.
Yeah.
So does that mean that Rumpel, that they're that... linked, or that Rumpel is just powerful enough to leave on his own. So I'm really, it's really interesting.
And okay, I'm just trying to get the pieces of the puzzle together. So apparently Peter Pan knows about Belle, which is another kind of mystery, because he's not supposed to know about Belle, unless he's somehow, I don't know, has some kind of a mind meld with Rumpelstiltskin, and they're like twins, and one can sense what the other is experiencing. And there is one more element that I want to bring into this discussion, and that is the episode with Rumpelstiltskin's shadow, what did Rumpelstiltskin want his shadow to do? To hide the dagger. And now I'm thinking, is he afraid that Peter Pan might find the dagger and turn into the Dark One instead of him? Has this something to do with him trying to... did the separation, if they are one and the same person, happen when he became the evil one and Peter Pan is somehow his innocence that he lost and that he banished, and that now that he's seen that Peter Pan has turned to evil as well and has lost hope and everything seems to be lost? I don't know. There's something there, and I really, 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 really am curious how they're going to, what they're going to show us, what's really going on.
It's so funny you say lost their father, because you have to remember that these two creators and writers are the same ones who did the move of the TV mm-hmm. series Lost.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they're on an island.
I know.
There was something my daughters brought up here. Here and in another scene where Regina and Gold were talking, and he said, Rumpel can only stop Pan by dying. My younger daughter kept saying, why don't they go get the Wraith? Why don't they go, you know, wasn't the Wraith a fate worse than death? You know, they sucked at your soul and sent you off somewhere. Why don't they go get that? And
because they need to mark him first.
Right. But we'll talk a little later about something else that Rumpel and Regina say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that might actually be very perceptive of your daughter. that might be the object that they need to retrieve.
I think Aurora has it, right? Because the Wraith went to kill. They sent the Wraith through a portal, mm-hmm. and it came through the portal when Snow and Emma also came through the portal, and it killed Philip. So Aurora has the amulet.
But you have to call the Wraith. Didn't he have to call it?
Well, he used the amulet to call him.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and is the amulet back in Storybrooke?
No, because...
No. Go ahead, Inga.
Because Philip accidentally marked himself by picking up the amulet. Hmm. And then the hands got sucked up by the Wraith. So later, Aurora got the amulet in a kind of a golden pocket mm-hmm. or little sachet.
I forgot about that whole deal. Anyway, we'll have to wait and see. But I guess the object has to do something with a portal, or you know, they need to get rid of Peter Pan and banish him into a place from which he cannot return. And it's probably linked to some object in that store. Perhaps we haven't seen it yet. Perhaps it's a new element that they're going to introduce. Let's go
Maybe
back.
They'll put him in a genie lamp.
Yeah, who knows? We go back to Regina, and she is outraged that they are still going after Neil, or going to try to find Neil. And then she's, are you really going to follow the evil Munchkin's dirt road? I guess that is a reference to the yellow brick road that goes from Munchkin country to Emerald City or something.
Absolutely. Follow the yellow brick road.
Yes.
And you go from the Munchkins.
Someone was born in Kansas. From Kansas. Yes, I picked up on that right away.
Yeah. And the evil Munchkin is Snow, right? Snow White.
No, that's
Pan.
No?
Pan.
Oh, Peter Pan. Okay.
And remember, they've mentioned this before. They've mentioned the ruby slippers.
Oh, yeah.
David, do you remember when they mentioned the mm-hmm. ruby slippers?
Right.
As a item that can transport you between realms.
Yeah. And I just love the fact that they say those things with such a straight face too.
Yes. What she says next is pretty cool. So what are you going to do? They ask Regina. Well, I'm going to save our son. So now all of a sudden it's not my son anymore, but it's our son. So she reminds Emma of her responsibility in this as well.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. It's just that Emma wants to do the right thing and doesn't want to go dark, whereas Regina is like, oh, let's go dark already, and we've lost enough time.
She's saying what a lot of the viewers are feeling. Come on, guys, move the story.
Yeah, and we all want to see Regina back to her, you know, bad self. She's most entertaining when she's evil. Now we go to the Under the Sea Ball, which I guess is a reference to, well, The Little Mermaid, Disney, but there's also an Under the Sea Ball in Back to the Future. And if this is deliberate, that this might be the first Back to the Future reference in Once Upon a Time. But the Under the Sea Ball doesn't look at all like what Marty McFly ends up at. This is a very fancy ball. I actually thought that the CGI castle was slightly better than previous CGI castles that we've seen. So there's some dancing. Ariel is very clumsy, of course. She's not used to walking. In the original fairy tale, it actually hurts when she walks. It's as if knives are being stuck in her feet, which intrigued me so much as a child when I read this story. I was like, oh my gosh, how can you walk? Little did I know that it was probably just a reference to the suffering that many women have to endure when they are walking with high heels on these parties.
No, come on,
follow. I did notice that they had her in those heels, and here she's just gotten legs for the first time, and she's already trying to walk around in those heels.
Yes, well, I guess
she was also wearing a lavender dress, lavender, kind of a subtle shade of purple being magic.
Oh, I didn't notice the colors, but that's a very
I was wondering where those dresses came from, because Snow was in her a kind of a rogue costume, and Ariel just came out of the sea, and suddenly they wear those very short gowns. So I was like,
oh, couldn't there just be magical tailors or something, or a magic store?
Oh, maybe they borrowed it.
They just picked them up somewhere. But I did notice Snow didn't look as beautiful as she usually does when she's being a princess. She did look like she had shed those clothes, put on this new dress, and just kind of ran a brush through her hair. And
both their dresses were a bit, let's say, on the clumsy side. It didn't look elegant. But it was during this Under the Sea party that we get one of the, I think, the funniest references to the original Disney Little Mermaid. And it is a reference to the fork, of course. And little quiz question to the three of you. Do you know what the fork was called in the Little Mermaid cartoon or the animated movie? What she calls it?
Doppelganger, doppel something.
Almost. David, any guesses?
Dinglehopper?
That's right.
The Dinglehopper.
And here's the clip.
Wasn't it called the Dinglehopper?
Look at this.
Oh, he's got the original.
Wow. This is special. This is very, very unusual.
What? What is it?
It's a Dinglehopper. Humans use these little babies to straighten their hair out. See, just a little twirl here and a yank there, and boy, ole. Yeah, got an aesthetically pleasing configuration of hair that humans go nuts over.
A dinglehopper. What about that one?
A dinglehopper. So 10 points to David. And you know what's funny? When the seagull does it to his hair and uses it to create that reminded me actually of the hair that we will see later on when Ursula makes an appearance. She has the same hair, so perhaps she has used the dinglehopper to create that, you know, the white fluff of hair. So the dinglehopper, or the salad trident, the fork, and I didn't know that they were going to bring this back later in the story. I thought it was brilliant. Then we hear another reference to another Disney movie, because Prince Eric, during the dance, tells Ariel that he is going to go on a journey. He wants to explore the world, travel the seas from this realm to Agrabah. Now, you know what that is referring to, Agrabah?
Aladdin.
It is indeed the kingdom of Aladdin. Aladdin, sorry.
Aladdin.
So, Agrabah. This is actually, it might be a way for them to do a short reference to the other Once Upon a Time series that is currently on TV, the spin-off series. Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, because, Aladdin and... I'm not even sure if Agrabah is in there, but Jafar is.
Yeah.
Which actually is perhaps a good occasion for a short break here and play a bit of audio feedback, since we're on the topic of Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. And we have a question from one of our listeners. Let's listen.
Hi, this is Elena from Chicago, Illinois. I'm a longtime listener of lots of SQ Band podcasts, and I'm a very big fan of Once Upon a Time. However, I was wondering what everyone's opinion was on Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. I've watched a few episodes and just can't seem to get into it or enjoy it, and in fact, I find it kind of boring. Wondering what everyone else's opinion was and wondering if there was something wrong with me. Hope to hear from you soon. Have a great day. God bless.
All right. Is there something wrong with her or not?
I don't think so. I'm not that impressed with it either, because this, I've seen the first episode and my eyes were bleeding because of the CGI. Mm. And I didn't bother to watch the rest of it. So maybe it got better. I don't
Shelley,
know.
Shelley, are you watching that series?
Well, I watched the first one and I enjoyed it, actually. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it, although I like her better with the knave than with the genie. And I have to admit, I have 3 or 4 episodes on my DVR that I have not had time to watch, although my 14-year-old daughter has watched them, and she tells me she's enjoying the show.
Oh, okay. What about you, David? Have you watched it? I think David has muted himself.
Unfortunately, no. I watched the pilot. I was.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Still there?
Yeah, still there.
There we go. Okay. The I tried to filter out the background noise, but I like the pilot, but I just thought I haven't had time to try the rest of them. The main thing that got me was, to be honest, I'm a fan of John Lithgow, so I wanted to see what he'd be like as an animated character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
other than that, no. I kind of like Shelley. It was okay. I wasn't hooked.
Mm-hmm. I watched the first 2 episodes and part of the 3rd episode when I was in Boston, in my hotel room. It was on TV, so it's the first time I watched anything live. It feels like a spin-off. It's not as good as Once Upon a Time. It's all feels a bit more rushed, a bit cheaper, and also a bit more, let's say, long in the tooth. It's not as snappy as Once Upon a Time. So it's okay, but I really think that they should have kept this for, let's say, the summer break, or when Once Upon a Time is not on TV. Then perhaps, it would be a nice way to kind of bridge the gap between the seasons of Once Upon a Time. But in comparison with the 3rd season of Once Upon a Time, especially now that it's getting better and better, and it's getting also higher rankings, more and more people are tuning in to watch it. I think it's kind of pale in comparison. So, boring. Well, it might get better, it's certainly not as good as I hoped it would be. All right, back to this episode. After all these mysteries about between Peter Pan and Rumpelstiltskin, where am I here? It's page 3 of my notes. There is, of course, the introduction of the big problem for Ariel, and that is that Prince Eric wants to take her on his boat. The only thing she needs to do is to show up in the morning so he won't get heartbroken. And, of course, we know that that will be too late. She will be back to being a mermaid. And then it turns out that Regina is using the magical mirror to observe all of this. And she hears from the 2 soldiers that Ariel is the one who saved Snow. And so she immediately, of course, hates Ariel and wants to do bad things to her. And in a very short, brief moment, she totally goes Darth Vader by killing one of the soldiers. This is what death looks like. She's actually faster than Darth Vader in the choking. And then we go to the Echo Cave. Neil is brought down from his cage. We still don't really know who's in the other cage. I'm now thinking that it's probably Tinkerbell. I don't know. But anyway, Neil has to be transported to the Echo Cave, and this is part of Peter Pan's big plan. And so let's hear about this Echo Cave and how that works. Wait a minute. No, we're not going to play that yet. Because before that, there is a conversation between Regina and Rumble, which I forget about. So let's talk about that first.
What is this? Amateur hour? Did you really believe that was Belle?
Why are you here?
Well, for starters, it appears I'm saving your ass. You were about to be Pan's lunch.
And what do you care?
I care because I've been camping with the Charmings for a week and getting nowhere. If we're going to get Henry, I need you.
We're the two most powerful practitioners of magic who have ever lived. The Evil Queen and the Dark One joining forces? I'd say we can find another way to handle one smug teenager.
You've never faced him. I have. And I know what killing him requires, and that is my life.
Well, as much as I want to, maybe we don't have to kill him.
All right, so that is the whole Regina Rumple thing. Pan Shadow was posing as Belle. But let's go to this whole Echo Cave thing, and then we'll talk about Ariel and Ursula, because Shelley has to leave, and she was desperate to say something about the Echo Cave. So
it's the crux of the whole episode. It's the weight of the whole episode. It's what's going to move all of the story forward.
Absolutely. Let's listen to Hook explaining how this Echo Cave works and why it could be potentially dangerous for all our heroes.
Echo Cave.
You know it.
All too well. I've lost half my crew inside those rock walls. The only way to rescue someone from inside is to reveal a secret.
A secret? That's all?
The darkest secret. Echo Cave derives its name from an old saying, the deeper the lie, the more truth in its echo. The cave demands that you reveal a truth about yourself. A secret you would never admit to anyone.
This is ridiculous.
Don't kill the messenger, love.
Even if we spill our guts, how do we know Neil's still alive in there?
Because this is what Pan wants. He wants us to rescue him. Why? So that we reveal our secrets. He believes once we do, our secrets will destroy us.
Revealing your secrets, will it destroy you or will it actually bring about salvation? Shelley, what is your take on all of this?
Oh, this is amazing, though, because Pan thinks it's like being on the ship when they fight. The more they fight, the bigger the storm got. So if they go inside and they actually admit to everybody their deepest, darkest secret, Pan thinks it's going to destroy them. But I think it's absolutely the opposite. If you look throughout this entire episode, you've got, Snow telling Ariel, take my advice, do the hard thing, be honest. Open your heart to love. She even tells her daughter, happy endings always begin with hope. Well, you can't have that hope. You can't have a happy ending if you're keeping secrets from one another. In the beginning, secrets keep us from the people we really care about. Charming will sometimes, those secrets protect the people we love. Mm-hmm. They have to unfold all of that right here.
Yes.
And there's four big secrets, each person. And honestly, the only one I absolutely was able to predict was Charming.
Oh, really?
Charming was an easy secret, right?
Yeah.
Hook's secret was just beautiful. When he first started, I kissed him. And they're like, yeah, that's not really a secret because I already told, mm-hmm. He's like, no, it's not that I kissed you. It's what it means. It's what it revealed to me.
Yeah.
That
he was
Mary
finally
Margaret,
able to let
she
go.
She goes into that big long line about our beautiful, wonderful daughter, and she's all grown up, and we were cheated, and I hated it, and I thought, oh, that's the secret. But then she whams, I want another baby. You're like, oh, well.
But that was not a secret.
Okay.
They have been trying in the past.
Is that
so? But maybe they weren't trying. Hmm. Maybe they weren't purposefully thinking of trying.
Hmm.
And then Emma. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be that she loves you, to Neil, love you. I thought it would be, what she basically confessed earlier to her mother and father, that she's still so angry and hurt about it all. But when she looked at him and she said, I love you, I mean, and then that wasn't what it did it.
Mm-hmm.
But when she said, I was hoping you were dead because it would be so much easier to put it behind me than to go forward with this pain.
That was like, so honest. Yeah.
Secrets. I also loved his reaction to it when they came out of the cage. Out of the cave. So, well, don't be angry at yourself that you feel that way, because look at what I did to you. You are entitled to feel that way. I understand.
It's a bit of a trope. What he does here, it's kind of the understanding husband. You know, I'm not sure if that would work like that in most situations, but oh well. It
and
fits
when they left,
they
weren't holding hands. He wasn't right next to her. He wasn't touching her in some way, which you would expect from a couple in love. That they wouldn't want to be separated again. They'd want to have that physical contact or be within reach, like Charming and Snow. They're always either holding hands or right shoulder to shoulder, or you know, they really stay very close. And these secrets have been drawing them apart, the dream shade and her inner feelings of being angry and upset. And it's more than just the understanding, it's the admitting. It's pardon the expression, it's confession and reconciliation.
It definitely is a moment of confession. And it's hurt, and that's painful, and it's difficult, but ultimately it's the only way to truly heal, and that's what's happening.
Right. And you have to heal in order to have hope.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah,
if you
definitely.
Can't have a happy ending without hope, then this moves the story forward. And to me, that was the most powerful part of this entire episode.
Yes, it does set up an interesting plot element for the rest of the season, and that is a love triangle, because well, Emma and Hook had a thing, very short thing, but it was definitely a thing. There was some magic happening there, and now Neil tells Emma, I will never stop fighting for you, that is my secret. I was like, yeah, that's not really a secret,
like,
that's
not
just
a secret.
being trying to be a Prince Charming. And then Hook is watching with a dark look, you know, so is this going to be a duel ahead? Is Neil going to, I don't know.
I don't know, because for Hook it wasn't that he loves Emma. The secret, the kiss.
That's true. It was more like letting
revealed
go.
Revealed to him that he could let go of Mila.
Yeah.
That he could let her go. He could allow himself to love again. I mean, how many people say, if something happened to my wife or my husband, I could never move forward. I could never move on. And you see the stories, the movies where they tell each other, look, I want you to go forward. I want you to be happy. I want you to. Mm-hmm. And so many times all this pain that causes evil. I mean, the reason Hook is the bad guy, it's because he was in pain over losing Mila, and he had that pain-driven revenge toward Rumpel. Well, does this mean that he's going to let that go? That he can move forward and be collegial with Rumpel, or they're going to work together to save Henry?
I hope not. I mean, that's the end of Hook. If Hook has no function in the story anymore, if there's no jealousy, there's no love triangle, then Hook is all understanding and sure, I'll let you go, Emma. You just do what you want. What's his place in the story? He can only kill himself.
Well, I don't mean that he would let Emma go entirely, but I mean that more that he himself can let go of Mila. I mean, and keep in mind, Henry is Mila's grandson.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Hook practically raised Bay when they were in Neverland. He was like a father to him. He was technically, I guess, like a stepfather to him.
You know what I think is going to happen? Hook, if it's true that Hook now is liberated, he has confessed basically, his deepest pain has come out, so there's no reason for him to be evil, dark anymore. He has basically also lost Emma now. Even though that was just a very short moment of attraction, the only thing left for Hook is to sacrifice himself by fighting and defeating Peter Pan instead of Rumpelstiltskin doing this. So that's and he will do it in order to save Henry. That's, I think, where this is going. But this is just a prediction, a wild theory.
That would be the sacrifice required for the redemption.
And for a nice way to exit his character, because he's been so important to the story, and you need to give him an heroic ending. And it would turn the story upside down. Hook would be the good guy. I'd love to see that. So.
And it's also, of course, in a real cartoon, Hook is the nemesis of Peter Pan.
Yeah, that's why I think it would be great to have a duel between Peter Pan and Hook. But then Peter Pan is evil and Hook is the good guy. I think we need to see some sword fighting at one point.
What a twist for Hook to win over Pan.
Yeah, it would be awesome. And it would be you know, good for everyone. It would bring about a happy ending. I want to go to Ursula and Regina. So, Shelley, if you need to go, feel free to go.
I can give you a few more minutes. Okay. So they haven't knocked down the door yet.
So. All right. Let me play that sound clip here.
I can help with your dilemma.
With Prince Eric? I have to tell him the truth, don't I?
Bah! Your friend was mistaken.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. What if I told you that you could keep your legs? That you can walk on land, be a part of his world forever, without ever telling him your secret that you're a mermaid? Would you be interested?
Those poor unfortunate souls. I loved this depiction of Ursula by Regina.
This was the fun part.
Yeah. Inga? What I was wondering was, is this her Pat Carroll imitation that she was doing?
Definitely.
Because she really talked like...
No, she is. Totally. This is an homage and a great one for that matter. It's like... Well, never do. You're just a mermaid. That is so the style of the Ursula in the Disney movie. I thought it was brilliant. I've learned that what's her name who plays Regina?
Lana Parilla
is a huge fan of the actress who had voiced Ursula in the Disney movie, and so she wanted to do this really well, and I think she nailed it. And the special effects were pretty creepy too. I just loved everything. Yeah. I was like, wait, is that? That's Regina. I just had to look twice, but it was fantastic.
I loved her coming up there as Ursula, and I love that she wasn't Ursula, but she was impersonating Ursula.
Yes.
I thought that was a good twist, because, you know, we talked about who's going to be Ursula. Is it going to be Regina? Is it going to be a different character? Who's it going to be? Blah, blah, blah. But again, they're so creative, and they put a lot of thought into this episode and how to make it true to the actual Disney tale, the one that we're familiar with, maybe not the actual Hans Christian Andersen tale, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think it was kind of funny that no one believed in the mythical Ursula anymore, which is kind of such a meta thing that in a series that is built on fairy tales, the fairy tale characters don't believe in myths. Oh, it's just a myth. Like, that is so funny. And then, of course, there's the big reveal when the real Ursula makes a brief appearance, and it's kind of this golden, creepy, like, really looks ancient mythology. And she's like, never impersonate me again. I think that was just a little thing. I don't think there's going to be a sequel to this. And that we will see the real Ursula again. But I just thought it was brilliant that they just made her appear for a brief second, so that we know that it's not just a myth. You know, the myths are true too, just like the fairy tales.
Had you noticed the fountain in the under the sea dance?
No.
In the ball?
No.
When they first walked in, and the fountain was in the background when you first see Ariel.
Okay.
I didn't know if you'd seen it
no.
then.
What kind of fountain was that?
It was the fountain. That's what came through the mirror to Regina. The real Ursula, she was the fountain.
Oh, really?
The fountain came to life.
I totally missed that. Oh, that's why she was all gold.
Go back and pause it. Because when they come down the stairs.
Oh, fantastic.
That fountain, it's a fountain in the background, and it's got the big statue, because we were all pointing it out.
Oh, wow.
And so when it came through the mirror, we were like, oh, that's so cool. It's because she can cross the realm, cross through the mirror to go into Regina.
Oh, wow. I totally missed that. That is brilliant. Makes me love this episode even more. Great. We're getting reminded again that Rumple can only kill Peter Pan by dying himself. So they stress this point time and again in this episode, which makes me think that this is going to be super important in a future episode. Regina tries to awaken the survival instincts of Rumpelstiltskin. And this is another very well-acted scene where Rumpelstiltskin goes from being, you know, good to being trying to be in control again. His anger flares up and he is like, oh, I think I just rediscovered my survival instinct. And it's great acting, even with his voice. You know, when he's still the kind of uncertain Rumple and trying to be good, his voice is actually higher pitched. And then when he turns evil, he starts to use the Rumpelstiltskin words again, you know, oh dearie, and he gets more creepy in his voice. It's just subtle acting, but very, very well done.
Well, I like the way that Regina gave him the hope for his happy ending. You know?
Yeah, it's, oh yeah.
You know, maybe we can find another way to contain him. And he's like, ooh, you know, I came here to kill him and die in the process. Yeah. But no, I just need a change of plans.
Mm-hmm. There's a little bump in the road, though. They just need to cross realms to get to Rumpelstiltskin's shop. You just have to cross realms. That's super easy. Well,
didn't you love his quote when Regina picked up that cone, that shell? And if you're trying to summon a big squid, that won't work.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm not ordering calamari.
That is brilliant. I laughed out loud.
And what a great tie-in to bring, if we're there, what a great tie-in to bring Ariel to Neverland.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That the mermaids can travel through across all these realms and that they'll use her to send a message back. Oh, by the way, here's your voice back.
Yes, yes. And we see this whole moment where she loses her voice because, first of all, we see Snow and Ariel. And then there's this magical bracelet. Ariel has spoken with Ursula. And now Snow is stuck with fins and Ariel has legs. That was kind of not very considerate to just, you know, do the switcheroo without really consulting Snow.
Yeah, but it goes into that naivete.
Yeah.
I thought of that. Ariel thought she had come up with a solution for Snow. You can escape your evil queen.
Right.
You can go hide out, live under the sea, and I'll go, you know, win-win for everybody. It's like she didn't really think it all the way through.
No, and there is the evil queen, and look at the catch of the day. Now she has Snow. And again, you see Snow's willingness to sacrifice herself so that Ariel can have a happy ending, very much in line with the Snow White that we've known for three seasons now. So that's pretty cool.
Well, and just to go back, when Ariel does go to confront Eric and tell him the truth and her voice is gone, Regina tells her the only thing worse than having your true love reject you is never having the chance at true love at all.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, it went in very well with this episode about the secrets and the love and people confessing and not keeping a secret.
Like not telling is worse than rejecting someone.
Or being rejected.
Right, right. And then she sneers at her, you little mermaid. And thereby she kind of like, again, does the final reference to the original Disney movie.
And she's going to give her a second chance. When she calls the mermaid, or when she calls Ariel to her in Neverland, she's like, oh, and by the way, Eric, he's in Storybrooke. So
yeah.
Here's your voice.
Which that's the big reveal at the end. Yeah, he's in Storybrooke. Tum tum tum. It's like, what? Have we seen him in Storybrooke?
Well, if that's not a big bait, then I don't know what is.
Yeah. Well, it's
so fair. We get another episode with Ariel, and I'm guessing we'll get to maybe see the second half of her story, the resolution.
Oh, we
maybe
certainly
she'll actually
will
get to confront him.
It's part of the promo. I'll play it in a second. I just want to go
the promo.
just want to go over the things that we've not mentioned yet. I love that Ariel's using the fork again as a weapon this time.
Yeah,
I couldn't see what I thought it was a knife, and then it's a fork. Ew. well, this whole baby thing of Snow, that's kind of interesting because Charming then has to say, well, you know, yeah, sure, I want you to have a baby. It's just not going to be me, the father. It's just going to stay here in Neverland. Kind of have to. No wonder that Snow is outraged. She's so mad. So there's definitely, again, some separation between the two that needs to be healed in the future.
And the whole thing that Charming is stuck in Neverland needs to be resolved.
Absolutely.
He needs to leave at one point.
So,
it's going to have to do with defeating Pan. If they can defeat Pan or Henry coming to believe in himself or Henry being able to change things because Henry can control the magic of the heart of the truest believer. I really think that's how that's going to be resolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's go to the promo for next week and play that. So for those of you that don't want to hear any spoilers, thanks for listening. And check out our actually, let me promote the Facebook page because we have a Facebook page for this particular podcast series, which is facebook.com. I don't even know if we have a specific URL for that. Let me just click on it and see what it does. It could be that we'll have to put it in the show notes. Where is it? Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Here it is. Okay, well, we'll give it a specific URL and put it in the show notes. But if you follow Secrets of Once Upon a Time on Facebook, that's the place where you can leave your comments on each episode. So just wanted to plug that. Let's go to the promo.
All new ABC next Sunday, from Under the Sea.
Hi, I'm Ariel.
To the shores of Storybrooke.
I came from Neverland. Rumpelstiltskin sent me.
The battle to reunite their family comes home.
It must be to save him, Henry, everyone.
Now, the fate of Neverland is in their hands.
We need to succeed.
Or people we really care about will die.
Once Upon a Time, all new next Sunday at 8, 7 Central on ABC.
I thought it looked awesome, this whole promo, with the shadows fighting Emma, and we see Storybrooke, and it's finally daylight again. Oh, was awesome. So I'm really looking forward to this story. The dwarves are back. It's just going to be this happy reunion with all these characters that we've not seen for many episodes. So super excited about that. And with that, I think we've come to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening. Thanks to all our hosts on the our co-hosts on the show. Perhaps next week we will have even more people on the show again. And again, for all the other podcasts that we produce over at the StarQuest Production Network, you can go to sqpn.com. And I'm sure that if you like this show, you will like our other shows as well. Thanks for listening, and talk to you soon.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.